Just a quick word from our affiliates before we jump into the episode. SafePoint Loan Working App is a really simple way for you to manage loan working. Utilizing WAP-free words to get you pinpoint accuracy on the location of your people when you really need it. Get yourself a discount using the link and code in the description of this episode. Let's jump into today's podcast. What's up, guys? Today we're talking all about kind of behavior-based safety and safety too. We even talk about rugby, probably a little bit too much, etc., etc., with today's guest, who is the original gangster of behavior-based safety.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviours.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding safety, crushing the stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Fluent. What's up, guys? Like I said, today's guest is Dr. Professor, book critic, keynote speaker, thought leader, the lot, the original gangster of, or one of the original gangsters of behavioral based safety. Now working with somebody that I highly regard as one of the most impressive people in safety, Jason Anker, who we've also had on the podcast. That's a massive giveaway. So today's guest, mental health, well-being leader, behavior-based safety expert, culture genius, etc., Professor Tim Marsh. He's coming on the podcast. Absolute legend to talk to. Really relaxed. Good bit of banter about rugby because he supports some real, like, second-rate team. I don't know what they're called, Wales or something like that. I'm not sure. Anyway, now he's gone from working all in that kind of behavioral-based safety, starting in the military, doing some research, not in the military, but doing some research with the military around suicide, and then moving into behavioral-based safety. There's a lot of work there, moving into culture, and now working, like I say, with Jason Anker, all around mental health and well-being. So just had a fascinating chat with Tim, and I'll stop waffling on, and I'll let you get into the podcast. We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a shameless sponsorship clip. In all seriousness, guys, we partnered up with DRM Group. You know, David McLean's been on the podcast time and time again. We absolutely support his message, and he's got a brand new online course to help you. I'm going to let him tell you all about it now.
The brain can be trained to think and behave differently, to think in more positive and optimistic ways. And there are steps that you can take to train your brain to feel good for good. And we call this lasting positive change. Through our 16-day program, which includes daily videos and action sheets, taking you no longer than 15 minutes to complete a day, you will learn how to move away from thoughts of anger, hopelessness, and frustration to a place of mental well-being and positivity.
Okay, guys, so if you're interested, you can click the link below and get a discount, special rebranding safety discount. Full disclosure, we get a little bit kickback from that. So at the same time as improving your mental health, you can support your favorite health and safety podcast and YouTube channel. I'll let you get back into the content. Tim, welcome to the podcast. Thank you very much for coming on.
You're welcome, James.
I think just for the viewers of YouTube, if they're... you should turn your hat around and be up front.
Are we recording now?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, we got the camera. Okay. This is my attempt to not look ridiculously scruffy, like Rumpelstiltskin or whatever it was I was looking at before. But there we go.
For anyone not on YouTube, Tim Mark, world leader of behavioural based safety of wellbeing, is wearing a woolly hat that says "Bad Hair Day."
And if I took it off, you'd know that it's a very accurate ad.
So I want to say that it's probably difficult times for everybody, but mostly a Welshman, because Wales was second from bottom in the Six Nations when we ended it, I think, weren't they?
if I remember rightly. Yeah,
well, I don't really know where we were, but I do know that we lost to England, and that means that my entire year is ruined. This coronavirus is nothing compared to losing to England. So.
Well, if you can't remember, I can remind you. I think Italy are on 0 points and Wales are on 7 points overall.
Oh, well, that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, I just wanted to...
Hey, listen, we scored the best try of the championship. I'm hanging everything on that.
On that, yeah, okay.
That was a cracking try, that.
It was, yeah. I just realised what I was saying yesterday, because I knew you're a Welsh rugby fan, and I was saying to the wife yesterday, I was like, I can't even remember the Six Nations now. It feels like forever ago.
We won't get the chance to play you in Cardiff next year, I don't think. Or we do, it'll be behind closed doors, and that'll negate huge amounts of benefit we get from playing in Cardiff, you know.
yeah, because Wales can only play well at home, so, you know, anyway.
I think we took you out of the World Cup somewhere along the line in England.
That was a long time ago.
We knocked you out of, wasn't it?
It was a long time ago.
That was in London when we did that. I don't know.
But I mean, if we were to compare that to the most recent World Cup, which is what we need to go base our facts off now, is that we went right to the end. And where did Wales get to?
You got to the end and you lost heavily against a team that we really should have beaten had we not been incredibly unlucky.
We really that should World have Cup, been.
I remember it now. I remember it well. Yeah, they slaughtered you in the final, I thought.
That's the famous word.
Get past us in the semis. So if you want to make a comparison.
There's nothing better than talking to a Welshman about rugby.
Well, don't forget, I'll just make the point for your viewers who might not be aware of the statistics. England has 20 times the number of players to pick from than Wales does. And the pick of the crop coming over from the South Sea, who always go to the big London clubs and therefore naturalises English. You know, yeah. We got Toby. Hey, we got our Tulupi.
Because Tulupi Faletau is a real traditional Welsh name, isn't it? Yeah.
Ebervale, mate. Brought up in Ebervale, along with his cousins, of course, both of whom are fantastic English players now, apparently.
Yeah. But then I can't complain, because Manu Tuilagi is not up there with your John Smiths, is it? So
he's quite possibly of South Sea heritage, isn't he? Well, we'd have lost Toby as well, though. But he's really homesick. He didn't want to leave Ebervale. So when his cousins went off to one of the posh English schools, wasn't it, Millfield, I imagine, and he stayed behind, like, thankfully.
Didn't know that.
So we got him. That's.
I have like an extra pain for Welsh rugby because I'm a Northampton Saints fan. So we had George North for a long time, who was outstanding, but then probably like the last 2-3 seasons was obviously missing home and wasn't playing very well. Second, he signed for a Welsh club, bang, back to good old George North. So for me, that was just a bloody Welshman ruining England.
Oh, well, I understand. He was always injured when he was playing for you as well, wasn't he?
So. He was, yeah. It was bloody frustrating. So, yeah. Anyway, let's talk in. It's not a rugby podcast.
Okay, this is... Okay. We need to cut out all of that, otherwise people are switched off already. You know?
No, I'm going to keep it in just for my own pleasure. right, Tim, why don't you give... For those that don't know, that might have been living in a cave forever, why don't you give us an introduction to yourself and...
Oh, okay. My background in occupational psychology, I did a PhD in occupational psychology, and my postdoc research was looking at suicide in army recruits back in, since 25 years ago, and reasons for, and the reasons was that, that was, the reasons were even, that that they would take pretty much anybody who could stand up, and then they would let basic training sort it out, and of course, the people who were suited, that was fine. People who weren't suited, that was quite a traumatic experience. And so that was my background. Soon after that, behavioural safety came to Europe, and they needed somebody to run a research project that could go on a building site. I knew I'd been working with squaddies, so thought I might be suitable. and I had a ball. I just absolutely loved it from day one. I'll tell you a story, if you like. If I've got time for a quick story.
Yeah. Yep, go
first
on.
Day's work, Blackburn Rovers, they're building the new stand. Jack Walker's money's coming in. So they're still building the stand. And they said, what you need to see is you need to see this thing on the roof. So they took me up the back of the stand. It's half built. Over the beam that's only half finished, and you're holding on with ropes and stuff. And he said, right, from here, you can hit the penalty spot with a spit. Not in this wind you couldn't, but, you know, on a still day you can. I summed up this. What on earth have you brought me up here for? You know, why would I want to do that? I'm terrified of heights. And they said, oh, we had a sweepstakes. The old guy from the uni would come up on the roof. And there were all his mates then waving up from below. And can I go down now? I'm terrified. And so because I'd gone up, they gave me what I needed. And that was day one, literally day one.
Wow.
I thought, this is going to be fun. You know,
Welcome to construction.
Welcome to the world of construction, yeah. And so I did that. As that broke in magazines, people contacted the university, said, you know, can we do this behavioural safety stuff? So myself and people like Dom Cooper instantly peeled away and formed companies. So that was 25-26 years ago. Obviously, you know, if you do behavioural safety, instantly you find that the reasons people are behaving, and a large amount, an element of that is that it's the way they're being supervised. So you get into safety leadership. The safety leadership, of course, is a subset of safety culture, and safety culture is a subset of culture. So over the years, you find yourself working more and more with boards and just talking about tone. And so you end up in places, and now with the overlap, something like Shell, you know, with a culture of care, which encompasses, well, well-being, mental health, just an approach of quality dialogue as well as safety. And so as you move up there, you realize that what you're doing impacts on mental health, well-being, general empowerment, et cetera, et cetera. And it's all based around the quality of dialogue and the quality of learning. Mm. So that's where I am now.
Fascinating journey. It sounds just amazing. And I do want to get heavily into that kind of the well-being work and the health and well-being work that you're doing now with Jason Anker. But I'm intrigued to kind of touch on with yourself is probably one of the kind of original gangsters of behavioural-based safety. It's kind of like this current, I would say, dividing of professionals between maybe like traditional behavior-based safety and your new kind of safety differently and safety to people, and how we see the kind of not market but professional just kind of bickering over. Find it extremely frustrating, and I just kind of put my position out there. It's kind of like, you know, we can't, the kind of compliance or safety one, as some people might call it, is the foundations, in my opinion. And the safety too is how we get to the next step. But I would just be interested on your being part of that kind of original foundation. Your opinion on that?
Yeah, no, it's really straightforward. If your viewers are interested, Dominic Cooper has just written an article, really trying to savage the whole safety differently thing. He's not really pulled any punches at all.
Yeah, I'm about halfway through that, if I'm honest.
Over 100 responses, I think, already after 2 days or something. Mm. But the safety differently thing, I mean, if you read Hal Nagel's original book, Safety 1, Safety 2, he is very explicit. It's Safety 2 on the back of Safety 1.
Yeah.
You know, Safety 1 is your foundation, Safety 2 is excellent. Nothing in Safety 2, you know, safety is said and safety is done. The key questions, what do you need from me? I want you to work safely and efficiently. You probably want to work safely and efficiently. What do you need? So the foundations of it are rock solid and to be lauded. This whole argument kind of passes me by, really. I you know, obviously when Decker, who wrote the book Safety Differently, when Decker wrote the Handbook of Human Error, mm-hmm. A lot of us read it and thought, absolutely, that's exactly what I was already doing that, really, in my own way. But certainly it reinforced my own view that, and reason, of course, James, reason's work, that 90% of what goes wrong is structural. So 90% of the time you should be understanding why an individual is doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And the personal focus should only be a small percentage, 10-20%, because if you apply your resources to the cause, that's, you end up with 20% of the person and 80% of the environment. No. And of course, Decker's book, Safety Differently, is based on Decker's earlier book. Of course it is. He's the same man, isn't he? So I just don't see a controversy at all, frankly.
No.
Although somehow, if you've got the word behavior in your job title in any way, that definitely felt like people were trying to brand you as somebody who went around the building site blowing a whistle and telling everybody when they could eat and so on. And that came out incredibly strongly in things like Hazards magazine's articles, and American unions as well. who seemed to feel that anybody working in behavioural safety was doing the whole catch a person doing something right, praise them for it thing, and only that. And the rest of us were just getting on with behavioural root cause analysis teams, collaborative working, lean, all the different techniques you use to say, right, what's going wrong? Why is it going wrong? What can we do to help you make it go right? And so really, apart from getting a bit irritated on stage a couple of times when people are trying to label you as something you're not, it's really passed me by the whole argument, really. Mm. You know, and I love the passion that Safety Differently brings. Dom, the way that it span off, or is perceived to have spun off into something controversial, like Dom covers incredibly well in his article. I'd be interested to see what the outcome of that is.
Yeah, I've got him on my list of to contact to get on the podcast because I like how passionate he is about the, like you said, that article doesn't pull any punches. It's
I'll recommend you, James, and he's a character, Dom. He really is a character. Ask him about mental health and whether safety professionals should be anywhere near mental health. Keep you busy for a bit.
That's one of the conversations I've got with you, actually. But so before we kind of move on from that, there's an interesting point that I think kind of resonates with what you were saying. I was listening to an interview that Sonny Gopal did with Professor Scott Geller, the American.
I know. Head. Yeah.
And he said in there, like, the conversation came up as to essentially like why it kind of didn't work to a point, you know, as kind of so broad as we may have expected it to do. And now we've essentially, in my opinion, just rebranded behavioral based safety by calling it safety 2 or culture or whatever. It's all the same stuff, but with a different name. But he was saying that, interestingly, it was like my job, he said, his job is a psychologist to come up with this stuff and put the theories out there, which is not my fault that consultants picked it up and sold it wrong, to walk around and show people videos of idiots doing stupid things and just say, right, this is Darwinism or whatever you call it, and say, you know, if you do this, you're going to die. And I thought that was really interesting that he was invested on it, but then so easily just kind of disconnected himself from it. I don't know if you've ever worked with Scott, but I just thought it was really...
Just last week was the last time on a podcast. And, you know, obviously Scott invented the term, or is reputed to have invented the term behavioural safety. But for me, he did an overview of behavioural safety in a book by Wiley Blackwell, The Psychology of Occupational Safety and Workplace Health. And he did an overview of behavioural safety in that, and I critiqued it, put it in my book, The Definitive Guide to Behavioural Safety. And my critique was basically that in it, Scott very clearly says, you need to understand the context because there may well, you know, be a reason why the person has done what they've done. Praise a person for doing something, feedback and all that personal stuff. And my argument, I feel very strongly, is he's wrong there because may well is too weak. Almost certainly would be a better way of coming in, a better mindset to drive the questions and the methodologies required. And again, based on reasons model that kind of suggests 80 to 90% of what goes on is structural.
The context.
So,
is...
Oh,
sorry. Go on. Carry on.
I was going to say, for me, obviously, I, at the risk of insulting some great people, I do feel that in certain parts of the world, in America particularly, they've really been going around in circles a little bit and sticking with old methodologies. And so, not to criticise Scott too much, but I'm very aware of the fact in his book, in that article, he doesn't reference Sidney Decker, for example, and he doesn't reference James Reason, and he doesn't reference Dominic Cooper. And obviously, I think that he should be. I think, as people, Deck is hugely influential, especially after Safety Differently. But back in the day, some of that stuff he was writing about, zigging and zagging, and what you need to do is put yourself in the shoes of the person when zigging and zagging both look like perfectly sensible options. And it's only afterwards, with the benefit of hindsight, we realise the mistake. Yeah, he really should be referencing that, I think. So. Mm. And should have been doing so for a decade or more.
I think you're right, though, of that kind of point of, like, I feel sometimes that we're just going around in circles talking about the same thing with a different title over and over again. And I was just like, I use a stupid example. I was at a congress in February where we had a lot of people talking about human HOP. So it was a human op, optimized performance. I can't remember now, but HOP. And I was talking to the head of safety and risk from ITV, Ruth Denyer, and Stuart Hughes, if I remember. And I said, I just feel frustrated when I'm sitting there listening to this stuff and be like, what's it going to take for people to stop just talking about this stuff and actually do it? Like, the basis, in my opinion, the basis of what we're talking about here is no different from what the legislation says. You know, do what's reasonable and practicable. You've got the HSE management standards talk about well-being and leadership, you know, all this stuff. So you can even go and watch Sean Bean in Sharp, and there's good examples of leadership, for God's sake. And that's like one of the world's oldest bloody TV series out there. Pirates had, you know, employee engagement. You know, Pirates had compensation. And I feel so frustrated sometimes. We're sitting here going around in circles and it's like, do you know what? It's just good leadership, a good, you know, management of a business, of a team that we've known for years. What's it going to take for us to actually...
What's it going to take? Complete lack of politics and ego, which is tricky. Yeah. I mean, you only have to look at the leaders of the free world or the leaders of China, for that matter, and their response to COVID. To realise that, you know, that's not an easy thing to get rid of. A more constructive observation, and I shared a stage with Scott Geller last week, and his thing at the moment is self-transcendence. You know, if you, Maslow's hierarchy, the top of it isn't self-actualization, it's self-transcendence. A lot of people don't know that. And self-transcendence is basically, it's a bit Buddhist really, but it's about humility. And understanding that you're part of a bigger picture and putting everything to one side, like ego and politics, which is the link that I was trying to make there. And really, you know, obviously there's lots of really academic tomes about this. Frankl, the guy who survived Auschwitz, is kind of the key writer about that. A Man's Search for Meaning, I think, is his book. But if you want something really accessible, there's a book called Captain Class. I think it was by a chap called Sam Walker. And he talks about all the best leaders in sports history.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, there's a guy called Patrick Leoncini, who is a professor in America, who talks about what makes a great team. You know, I think his first book was The Five Mistakes You Shouldn't Make, and he switched it to The Three Things You Should Do in his later work. But top of it, that's hard work, of course, and graft, or what Seligman calls grift, or what we would call Heinrich's principle about working the bottom of the triangle and getting the luck you deserve. But Walker's book covers all the best captains in sports history.
He
says they've all got one thing in common, really, which is they work really hard and they do what the team needs. And they see what the team needs and they do it. So I think Richie McCaw was a really good example of a great rugby captain, obviously. And he said, you know, if he thought the referee was weak, he'd pick on him. If he thought he could get away with roughing people up, he would rough them up. If he thought the referee was strong, he would be respectful. He would just tailor what he did to suit the situation and absolutely ruthlessly for the benefit of his team. If he thought getting himself sent off would work, he'd get himself sent off. He never did that, right?
Yeah.
That was a footballer from Real Madrid, wasn't it, or something? But but you know, some really interesting case studies about this humility and how humility is absolutely the key to great leadership. If any of your viewers are interested, and like this sport. And if they don't, they won't be listening to this because we'd have put them off with the rugby. But that's a great read.
And as much as it pains me to say, someone that reminds me of how Richie McCaw kind of does what he does is, difficult to say this, but Alan Wynne Jones reminds me very much of that. He's very good. And just as an example of what he did with Joe Marler when he grabbed his... You know, he blew that up. You know, he played social media, and I was just like, "You absolute genius! You absolute."
Well, on a less controversial note, and with no testicle grabbing references at all, I saw a thing praising Tom Curry, I think, in the paper just yesterday, saying, "Oh, this guy is, you know, puts the hard yards in," and then they said, "You know, yards made, tackles put in." And clearances made, all the graft stuff. And he was really high up all the lists, you know, was Tom Curry. Just to realize he was like third and second and fourth.
Yeah.
One, Alan Wynne.
Right. So, end of call.
Okay.
Right. Anyway, we digress again. Let's get into this kind of health and well-being stuff then, because you came. So actually, how I kind of want to start this is firstly, like, I don't know if you have an opportunity to listen to Jason when we had him on here, but he speaks quite open and honestly about that kind of journey that you seemed quite instrumental in, or at least like really heavily involved in his journey. From, you could just look at like his different keynotes, you know, his original keynotes were, you know, stop and just take that couple of seconds to think about what you're doing, and it was very kind of personally focused, whereas now he talks quite heavily around, you know, bouncing back, the well-being, but also that kind of, as a business owner, considering the environment and the well-being of your people around. And he said that quite openly that was a really hard transition for him, that you were kind of part of that process with him. Was that all as Anchor and Marsh formed, or before and after, or at the same time?
A bit of both. As you know, when I took a couple of years out to look after one of my children who wasn't very well, while I was thinking of coming back, one of the things I was doing was I'd meet Jason for the odd pint, you know, and we'd chat about his business and what I thought. He should even ask me, well, what should I do? I said, well, you need product, you know, you know, you don't just want to be you as an inspirational speaker, you should really point people towards product, training, and so on. Mm. And we really talked about, well, just life and where the world of safety and health was going. I can't remember if I suggested it or I agreed with his suggestion, or possibly I suggested it, that, you know, why not give a talk about the fact that he is an exemplar of all the things we talk about, you know? He is positive, he is successful, he is resilient. And I suggested, I think, a talk, it's, you know, it's not about the fall, it's about the bounce, you know? Although I don't want to take any credit, but you know, certainly we had a discussion, and I think Jason has found that really liberating, because of course he's now sitting in front of an audience. Instead of saying, be careful, you could end up like me, he's saying, if you work hard, you could end up like me. Mm. And that's a very different message to be giving, more inspirational, I feel, and obviously much better for Jason. I think, you know, he's facing forward very much, and you know, he looks to me, he looks 10 years younger than he did 10 years ago. Oh, wow. So it's you know, and excuse me, his talks are fantastic. Mm. You know, and you know, the different people he's met on his journey and how they've influenced him. You know, people who say things. I think there was a chap who said, "I can only do 70% of the things that I used to be able to do, but I enjoy them twice as much."
Mm, I love that.
You know, and so on, and you know, he really has bounced incredibly well. You know, he's successful, he's happy, he's very healthy, you know, and he's enjoying life. Obviously, we set the company up, and it started really quite promisingly, but Brexit really got in the way. I can't tell you how many we need to see what happens before we can commit to this project. We just got through that. Everything was looking absolutely rosy for 2020. But you know, we went on the phone, we had a Skype yesterday, and we were both laughing and joking and saying, well, we'll make the most of it. I'm watching box sets, I'm reading books, I'm writing articles, I'm doing podcasts, you know, let's just make the most of it. It's so that's what we're trying to do.
Awesome. I was listening to someone else's podcast yesterday, and I can't remember who it was now, and they were saying, you know, 2020 is going to be my big year. It was obviously not, it was pre-recorded a while ago, and I was listening, and it was like, so next year I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm listening to it like, no, you're not, mate. No, you're not. How different everything is. Oh, do you think, like,
do you know, it's a mindset, James, isn't it? It's you just got to, you know, like everything else in life, and everybody, like the Seligmans of this world, it's a mindset. It's the farmer, you know, the famous story about the farmer.
No, I don't know.
Oh well, it's like, you know, it's a Buddhist story, really. It's basically, you know, there's a farmer, and his neighbour comes up to him and says, "I believe there's going to be a war. Isn't that terrible?" And he says, "Well, too early to know yet, you know." Anyway, soon afterwards, I think the farmer's son, breaks his leg really badly and can't help with the crops. And the neighbour comes over and says, "This is terrible, bad news for you." And he says, "Well, you know, too early to say, really, isn't it? You know. Anyway, the war sweeps through the village. All the young men are taken off and off to war and certain death. But they don't take the son because he can't walk. He's got broken leg. So the farmer's neighbour comes over and says, "God, you're wise. How did you know? What good luck that your son broke his leg." And the farmer says, "Too early to say, really."
That is a good story.
You know, and if you can have that mindset of, you know, so it wasn't great that Lauren got ill. It wasn't great that sort of led to the breakup of my old company, Rydermar Safety. But now I'm working with Jason. I couldn't be happier. What a stroke of luck that was.
Well, it's too early to say, really, isn't it?
Oh.
See what I did there? I'd just like to say
score one to James, really.
But Jason is just an amazing guy. Like he's still to this day like one of the best people I think we've had on this podcast. Like I just felt instantly like I knew the guy. I remember I spoke to him on the podcast and then a few times over social media, but I only met him in February at this congress and kind of walked over to him and we were chatting away and then he said, like, you realize we haven't actually met like face to face, but I just felt like I knew him. He's such a lovely guy. Do you think
he is?
Go on. Sorry.
No, I was going to say he is. He's a lovely guy, and he's lovely to everybody, and as genuine and as kind as he comes across.
True. Do you think the kind of seeds were sown with to lead you into the kind of wellbeing piece when you did the kind of first work with the suicide in the army? Like that must have been heavily focused on wellbeing and health from like a mental health point of view, or do you think it was unknown at that point? Or
I mean, back in the day, we were talking about things like realistic job previews and saying, like, if you sell the army as a wondrous adventure, and then you end up spending most of your time in barracks with people who don't really like you because they're not suited to the army, you're a bit clumsy, you're a bit not very fit, you're a bit introverted, anxious, and so on, and all the stable, extroverted, the naturally tidy people, you know, are thriving around you. So you need to let people know. But certainly that was my interest, and really it's not so much taking a lead from that. It's just that the whole world of she turned back towards where I come from. So I like to think I was at conferences 6-7 years ago and thinking we need to start talking about well-being, you know, and realizing, I think, you know, like banner headline stuff, like if you get your well-being absolutely right, engagement, empowerment, involves engagement, it involves empowerment, it involves quality dialogue, it involves treating people with respect, it involves leading people like Richie McCaw, you know, we talked about that, then really 80% of your behavioural safety issues will take care of themselves, you know, because people will be empowered, people will be switched on, people will be engaged, people will be alert. And if they've got something to say and something that they can share, then they will, because they'll go and talk to you because they expect you to listen. And, you know, there's an awful lot of organisations out there that doesn't apply at all, as you know.
Yeah.
So if you all the things you need to do to have a really engaged, empowered, happy, thriving workforce necessarily cascade all over behavioural safety issues and a whole bunch of other stuff as well, including mental health.
Do you think this is the well-being thing? Is that kind of that one thing we've been missing? Like, so, and I taught that from a point of view. Like everyone talks about kind of breaking this plateau of kind of workplace fatalities and serious injuries that we've been stuck on this plateau as an industry, well, as a profession for so many years. Is that kind of managing well-being that thing that we're missing? Like you're saying, it's so similar to all those kind of revolutionary stuff that we're talking about, like the safety two and differently. It's all so similar. Is it just managing well-being, do you think? Or is it
I don't think talking about stuff that's been missing, I think it will help. And I think a really good understanding of the interplay between different things will really help drive it even lower. But like a lot of people, you know, we're looking at fatalities in the UK less than 200 now. which obviously for the 200 people involved is terrible. And obviously Don Cooper's got a very different opinion on this. But, you know, I'm not really looking at that 200. You know, obviously your primary focus has got to be on the 5,000 or so working age people who kill themselves. Or, you know, and if you get the British Occupational Hygiene Society people on, then they say, what about the 12,000 people minimum that die as a result of exposure? Mm. So I forget the name of the guy built the tunnel. Oh, Geordie, Big Geordie. Oh. Anyway, you know, he was championing the expression, we've got to stop shouting safety and whispering health and maybe turn it around. You know, it does say HSE, you know, and we really need to focus on health issues. Obviously, mental health is attracted a huge amount of attention. And the BOHS saying, well, our problem is even bigger. Mm. And maybe, just maybe, one of the things that will come good from COVID is that, you know, our British Occupational Hygiene Society will do things like this. Say, look, you can't see the pathogens in the air, but if you put this ultraviolet light on them, you can see them. And actually, it's quite harmful. And techniques like that people could do, but kind of don't, because, you know, maybe they'll start doing it more often in the future, you know,
yeah.
For reasons of the bleeding obvious. So that we might get a boost there. And if, you know, you're talking about a minimum of 12,000 people a year dying prematurely, because at least in part. I don't know, it's partial out, isn't it? It's not in part, it's partial out as a result of exposure. So we've got huge mountains to climb, and the thousands of people working age who kill themselves. And of course, if you're talking about Heinrich's triangle, you know, we don't know how related it is to work, but we know that work contributes quite a lot to that. Yeah. And obviously home life and health as well, of course, but it's all a mix. You know, you're talking about lots and lots of people who are hanging by a thread, tens of thousands who are hanging by a thread, and hundreds of thousands and millions who are just having a really bad day. Mm. And so, you know, it's a huge opportunity if we could do the classic step change and have that. There were all sorts of benefits to what they call UK PLC. You know, was everybody's much more productive and engaged, less disruption of turnover and absenteeism and presenteeism and so on. Happier people, so happier home life, mm. less alcohol consumption, etc., etc. You know, so there's a huge opportunity to do what we're doing better, I think. Just and starting with, to go back to the safety differently thing, just getting into the habit of saying to people, what do you need?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you need from me?
It's interesting when we hear like the kind of on the news and you talk about the mental health crisis that we're in the UK, and that the NHS can't cope, and we need to give more money to the NHS. Probably we do. I'm not in a position to say whether we should or shouldn't do that, but I think we as safety professionals and quite increasingly becoming mental health bloody professionals as well, which is kind of a question for in a minute. But he's good. We seem not to be dealing with the root cause. And I'm not saying that, like you just said, you know, work is not the only root cause. You know, I'm not naive enough to say that, but we do spend a hell of a lot of our time at work, and that business owners, leaders, managers, and even ourselves, we can acknowledge that, you know, if we just did that, you know, I don't know, let's say it's McPherson Manufacturing decided we're going to help our 150 members of staff, and we're going to really focus on that wellbeing piece and just forget about the kind of profits and stuff that we might become more efficient, which we'll come on to in a minute, but we're doing our bit. That's 150 less people potentially committing suicide or going to counseling or, you know, putting that stress on the NHS. You know, how kind of impactful would it be in your opinion? Like, quite similarly to environment, my wife says quite a lot, you know, we don't require everybody to be perfect, we require, you know, everybody to be imperfect. Like, if we did one more thing that little bit better, you know, it would make such a national difference, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, you know, we could, you know, it depends how strategic and overriding you want to be. You know, we could probably alleviate world problems poverty if we could just persuade everybody to eat half as much meat. Mm. Because we, you know, all the figures suggest that would work. And on a micro level, you know, if I eat half as much meat, and I cut out my dairy, and I take more exercise, and I cut down on my drinking, I'll almost certainly be a more productive individual than if I didn't. Mm. You know, and we can all do that. So there's all sorts of things. I mean, on a methodological level, you know, if I could just persuade every factory to have behavioural root cause analysis teams in it, which are basically, you know, this is what ABC analysis, this is temptation analysis, this is reasons cheese model of causation and blah, 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 HST 48, all, you know, just some basics. Mm-hmm. Right, now, okay, that's a bit of background for you. Right, what goes wrong? Why does it go wrong? What can we do about it? You know, if we could just get twice as many teams like that generating ideas from the front line saying, well, this is what happens in practice, you know? Yeah, you're supposed to do this, but we don't. You know, but we would if you did this, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That would transform organizations. You know, the classic question of what's slow, inconvenient, or uncomfortable about doing this job safely? You can ask that of lone workers, home workers in particular, because you know if the answer to that is all this, not everybody will use that as an excuse to cut a corner, but lots of us will and often. So we can work on that. If we could double the number of times we get people to ask the question why curiously of something going wrong, with the assumption that there's a sensible reason for it, it might not be, but usually there is. You know, we'll get better dialogue and better responses and better answers, better analysis. And you know, and then Jason's piece. You know, Jason when he did his talk about don't be like me. He'd say just take 5 seconds. 5 seconds can save your life. Almost every accident there's ever been, if somebody had stopped for 5-10 seconds and thought, they could have stopped it. You know, in the world of mental health, is, you know, when I ask you this morning, are you all right, James? If I spend half a second listening to you saying, yeah, well, good, great, crack on it. You know, if I can train myself to spend 5 seconds listening to your answer and paying full attention, I might actually spot that, nah, you're not all right at all, actually. Mm. And so in Jason's talks now, he talks about, you know, when you ask people if they're okay, actually listen to the answer. You know?
Yeah.
And obviously that plugs directly into things like Shell's culture of care.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a fantastically difficult methodology, is it?
No. Do you find, you know, a lot of this is just like, to be crude, it's kind of, you know, not being a dick about it and actually caring about people. And I remember delivering an IOSH managing safely course a few years ago, and we came onto this conversation, and I said back then, you know, how many times you actually ask your staff, you know, how are you? And obviously everybody said, oh, all the time. Like, how many times you ask your staff how are you, and then you finish the conversation with, oh, by the way, have you done that report, or have you finished this thing with that client? Like, and then everyone was like, well, yeah, pretty much. The only time I talk to him is when I need him to do something. It's like, whatever happened to us just sitting down and having a cup of tea or a cup of coffee with someone? And it's quite interestingly what Jason said when we had him on the podcast. It's like, we've got so good at the safety side of things that we've forgotten the health side of things. And then combine that with how the society has changed. So, you know, he was comparing it to, we used to have working men's clubs, you know, conservative clubs, all of these kind of clubs that everyone would go to work, finish work, down the pub. Okay, there's an argument for the health side of things, granted, but from that kind of social mental health, which socializing is such a big part of, that kind of mental health side of things, we never do that anymore, do we? We finish work, we go home, and we sit at home. That's it.
We watch Netflix.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, all that working men's club, sports and social club, bowling, you know, all that. Sport that we don't play very much anymore, you know, all the cricket clubs are dying and so on. That all plugs directly into that kind of hoogie thing that the Danes go on about, you know. Just sit down with some friends, couple of beers with friends, doesn't hurt. You know, and you know, we talked before about Sam Walker's captain class and the All Blacks, you know, and there's a book called Legacy. I don't know if you. It's a slightly more academic one. He's obviously done a huge amount of research, the chap that wrote it. He referenced all sorts of interesting things. But, you know, in there, the core of it is they all sat down one day and said, right, okay, this is the rule now, no dickheads. Mm. Yeah. Mm. We haven't got time or space to deal with them. If you're a dickhead, you're out, no matter how good a player you are. Mm. No, I'm quoting.
No, I love it.
and yeah, that's about it, isn't it? I just... just to go back to your point. Yeah.
And this stuff is just happening at such an unprecedented rate, isn't it? Because it's like, I mean, when I started at my old rugby club, we were putting out 6-7 teams a weekend. Like, you know, if you were put Colts and then like 4 or 5 kind of adult teams and events teams, like consistently nearly every weekend. Even that same club was in the magazine, the kind of national rugby magazine once, because we put out more teams than anyone had put out before in one weekend. And by the time I left, and now actually, when I talk back to kind of people that still play there, they only have a first, second and third, and that's it. And they're still struggling to put out that third team. And it's like, do you know what? When I started, it was first, second, fourth, fifth, the vets, the Colts. It was just fascinating, all these people. And then you go to the clubhouse afterwards and it was just buzzing, and you do all the kind of stupid rugby stuff as well. But within like five...
Well, I never did, James. I was always very sensible and sober.
Of course you were. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You've never stung your underpants and downed a pint or something like that. It's just happening so quick. I mean, that's like, I spent a good 5 years at that club, and within that time, it had gone from putting out six, seven teams a weekend to struggling to put out 3 teams.
No, and it's the same with cricket, you know, which is another very sociable sport, and great for your mental health. Cricket, it's all about banter, you know, and that's one of the reasons that ex-professional cricketers struggle so badly with their mental health. They just really, really miss the camaraderie, and it's just one of the problem occupations, isn't it? But, you know, I'm still playing. I'm still trying to turn my arm over and so on. And all the teams we're playing now in the Cheshire League, it's old men and their sons. You know, there don't seem to be any. It's really, you know, people who've been playing for 30 years already. Mm. And the kids aren't old enough to say no to dad yet. you know, it's a 16-year-old stood next to a 60-year-old in the slips and that sort of thing. And, yeah.
It's a shame, isn't it? And as well, I mean, you kind of alluded to it earlier, but the potential of managing wellbeing from a business point of view, the efficiency, the kind of increase in profit potentially, which will come with efficiency, that, you know, presenteeism, absenteeism and all that is going to go down. It's good for business, isn't it? To just manage this stuff, surely.
It is, and it's going to be, you know, care homes is a really interesting case study. I'm looking at my own book, actually, Organised Wellbeing. But I did an interview when I was researching it, and there was a... Oops, that's gone up a bit, isn't it? There was a chap who ran care homes, and he was a big advocate of all the stuff we're talking about. And his position was, I said, well, you know, it's very enlightening what you're doing. He said, no, it's not. If I don't have low turnover, low absenteeism and low presenteeism, I can't function. I can't even, I can't keep the company afloat. Mm. You know, I have to invest in it, otherwise I'm going under. Mm. You know, and I think there's a lesson that it applies whether you're doing well and you want to maximize your profits, or it applies if you're struggling, you know. Because if you're struggling, it's very, very easy to make some silly decisions that look like they're effective in the short term that will actually hold you under the waterline going forward.
So. Mm. What the kind of, if people to kind of walk away from this podcast, what are the kind of things that we can do as business owners, leaders, managers, team leaders, supervisors, whatever we are, safety professionals as well, like, immediately? I mean, I think everyone listening to this probably already knows the answer, but just to kind of solidify it, those things that we can all kind of take ourselves to do to kind of improve these kind of things, would you say? Geez.
That's a tough question.
And the answer is buy my book.
The answer is buy Matthew Saeed's book.
Which one?
First things first, buy Matthew Saeed's Black Box Thinking.
Okay.
Which is a wonderful read all about the power of learning.
Fascinating book.
And remember that everything that goes wrong is an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that things will go wrong all the time. And the more you strive to achieve, the more things will go wrong. So having a really grown-up, adult, analytical approach to human error and human fallibility will really help you wherever you go, whether you're a world leader or just a, you know, manager of a small team. I think that's the first place to start. Really, Dale Carnegie's book again, you know, all about that nudge stuff. That if you do spend 5 seconds listening to the answer about "Are you all right?", you'll learn a lot, and try and apply it best you can. I never forget that the key things that drive your organization are not your strategic decisions so much, but the daily habits, because your culture is your daily habits. And if you can get your daily habits right, leading by example in a positive way, because you're always leading by example, whether you want to be or not, coaching rather than telling, praising rather than criticizing, and just having really good quality, two-way, respectful, adult, analytical dialogue, you won't be going far wrong.
Nice. And we had a little bit of a conversation on LinkedIn the other day about Matthew Syed's other book, Rebel Ideas, which I thought was quite interesting, actually. I've gone back through it since your comment and had a look at page 58, I think it was.
58, is it?
Which, so that anyone that listens to your podcast is like my favourite book so far. It absolutely blew my mind of kind of all the examples. But like you were saying, that it felt a bit padded to get across quite a simple point, which was on 58, which I thought was quite interesting.
Well, I just think, I mean, the point that he makes is great, isn't it? If you have a collection of like-minded people, you have fantastic expertise about a small area. If you get a diverse group of people, then you get different views and different ideas, and he gives fantastic examples about 9/11 and so on. But I did think that the whole book really was just about those two diagrams. And is it page 58, is it?
I can't remember. I'm sure it's a video, and I only looked like 2 days ago, but I forgot the number already. But yeah.
Anyway, I did think it was. I felt it was a little bit padded, but to give him a boost, rather, I don't want to criticise the great man. Bounce, I think, is a wonderful book. Have you read Bounce?
No, I've listened to Black Box Thinking, and I've read Rebel Ideas, but I haven't read Bounce yet. It's on my list.
It's Bounce is hugely important. It basically says, it's Heinrich's principle, not Heinrich's triangle, the controversy about predicted. Yeah. Heinrich's principle that if you put the graft in, you tend to get the luck that you deserve at the top of the triangle. And he gives huge numbers of fascinating examples, like, you know, David Beckham's record for keeping up when he first practiced, it was 6 or something at the end of his first day before he went on to be the world record holder or whatever he did. Mozart was a very average musician. For a while, you know, he wasn't the child genius at all, but his dad made him practice all day every day. He was a music coach in Salzburg.
Some people actually think Mozart was not a very good musician at all, and it was a bit potluck or something like that. I can't remember.
Well, no, they said that all his early work, you know, quite a lot of his early work was poor, and that actually he was a bit of a late developer, frankly.
Developer.
Yeah, and lots of stories like that in that book, which is, well, basically, so if you go through life knowing that you probably get the luck that you deserve and you need to put the graft in and you need to learn from everything around you best you can and keep an open mind and be very mindful of the fact that people will make mistakes all the time, you won't go too far wrong. So if you got Bounce in one pocket, you know, Black Box Thinking in the other pocket, Rebel Ideas up for you to remind yourself to listen to other people who disagree with you. and Captain Class to remind you to be humble at all times and do what needs doing, you won't go far wrong, really. I would have thought, yeah. There we go. We got the University of Life, four books, read them, follow them, and the Tibetan Book of the Dead as well, or something. And you've got it covered, really, haven't you?
You get those four books, you do anything. The world is your oyster.
The world is your lobster. Yeah.
Well, Tim, I thank you very, very much for kind of coming on the podcast and chatting with us. You're definitely one of, like I say, the original gangsters of kind of safety and all the kind of stuff that you're doing now. And would have never thought I could get Mr. Tim Marsh. Dr. Tim Marsh, isn't it?
Professor, technically.
Professor Tim Marsh on my podcast. So thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate that.
You're very, very welcome. I hope I said some stuff that might be interesting or thought-provoking.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, well, Well, I did my best, but what would you know? You're an English rugby man, so your opinion doesn't count, frankly, much around here. It's lovely to talk to you, James. You're really very welcome.
Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed. Okay, guys, I hope you enjoyed that podcast. Tim Marsh, just like I say, original gangster of all this stuff. I love the way I love how relaxed he is in chatting and a good bit of banter about the rugby. It was just a good laugh. It was just generally a very good kind of current COVID chat, if I'm honest, seeing as we're all kind of having Zoom chats nowadays. So yeah, overall, very nice chat, very nice gents. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, give us a like, give us a comment. If you're on iTunes, give us a rate and review. All the books and stuff that we mentioned, we're going to link in the description below. There'll be a little Amazon link. It is an affiliate link, so hopefully if you're going to buy the book or you're going to buy anything off Amazon, go through the link below and I'll get a little bit of money that I can put towards this podcast, keep making it better. And also, you know, feed my children. That's a joke. That is a joke, but I don't have any children yet. They're on their way. But either way, I could feed them. I feel bad for making you feel bad now. Anyway, yeah, please buy something through the link below. All the books that we mentioned, or most of the books that we mentioned, are down in the description below. Tim's LinkedIn and Anchor and Marsh website are in the links below. So you can go talk to Jason and Tim more through their website, Anchor and Marsh, and you could do some work with them if you like. Or if you just want to have a chat with Tim, you can hook him up on LinkedIn. Talking to social media, if you want to come chat to me some more, all of our social medias are coming onto the screen now if you listen on YouTube. If not, it's Rebranding Safety on Facebook and Rebranding Safety on LinkedIn, because we now have a LinkedIn page, and it's Rebranded Safety on Twitter. Don't ask me why it's Rebranded Safety, because it's just such a stupid thing about not having enough letters in the thing, so that's how we did it. Was it a good idea? I don't know. I'm yet to decide. Anyway, yeah. If you do give us a rate, review or anything like that, give us a screenshot, send it to one of those social medias so we can give you a shout out on the podcast. Otherwise, I'll see you next week. Safe. Hey, everyone, just a quick message from our affiliate program. Using DRM's online course, you can learn to move away from feelings of anger and frustration and get yourself some lasting positive change. Click the link in the description of this episode to get yourself a discount. And thank you for listening to Rebranding Safety.